more than 20 books, including The Supremacist, Turbo Reader, and the revealing new book, The Flip Side of Feminism. And now, here's the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
We usually hear a noisy outcry on the left at any suggestion of requiring a photo ID for voting. But you may be surprised to learn that some other democracies regard them as a necessity. Just look at Mexico, where the Federal Electoral Institute issues citizens a free photo ID known as a voter credential. The system was put in place 20 years ago as a response to widespread voter fraud in Mexican elections. Rules are very strict, and no exceptions are made for those who arrive at the polls without their ID. The agency makes no apologies for this. They say the system is necessary to restore confidence in elections after years of corruption. In the United States, you need a photo ID to drive a car, to check into a hotel, or to rent a movie. But we're told we cannot require photo IDs for voting. Liberals claim that photo ID laws would decrease voter turnout and create a burden for the poor. However, neither of these things has happened in Mexico. In fact, the free IDs have been beneficial to the country's poor because they now have identification they need for other situations. That's why former Atlanta mayor and civil rights activist Andrew Young supports voter ID laws in the U.S. so that poor minorities are provided with the ID they need to fully participate in American life. Mexico's laws have also increased confidence in the fairness of elections and thus increased voter turnout. A similar increase in voter turnout happened in Indiana and Georgia when those states implemented photo ID laws. If we don't require a photo ID at our U.S. polls, that doesn't make it any easier for people to vote. It just makes it easier for people to cast a fraudulent vote.
Are you a college student eager to stand up for your conservative beliefs and stand against liberal ideologies? Do you want to build a network with other conservative students? Don't miss the annual Eagle Forum Collegian Summit, July 18 and 19 in Washington, D.C. It's free to students who register in advance. Go to eagleforum.org and click on Collegians. That's eagleforum.org. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with hawthorn, glucosamine chondroitin, sea cucumber, colloidal minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, colon enhancer, our top selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
I'm Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America, and I want to invite you to join the Second Amendment movement with Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. Take action by becoming a GOA member today by going to gunowners.org. Gun Owners members receive the GOA newsletter, fact sheets, alerts, certificates, and more. But there's more to joining GOA than just a list of member benefits. The United Voice of GOA members has been successful in defeating restrictive legislation designed to disarm our population. GOA has helped get strong constitutional members of Congress like Senator Ted Cruz elected. And with your help, GOA will continue to successfully defend the rights of gun owners in the courts. Participate in our efforts to restore and preserve the nation's right to keep and bear arms. All contributions to our lobbying efforts are used exclusively to support or oppose firearms legislation. Join online at gunowners.org.
It's no secret that Big Brother is spying on your web activity. VPNForAll.com protects your internet from tyranny with military-grade encryption. VPN for All keep no records of your browsing, so you leave no trace. VPN for All are in Holland, free from the NSA and police state jurisdiction. Easy to sign up and use. It stops all data mining. Go to VPNForAll.com immediately and stay safe. That's VPN, the number 4, all.com.
Water filtration holiday specials from RBN. You can get a Royal Berkey made of polished stainless steel that holds 3.25 gallons and comes with two black Berkey purification elements, one shower filter that'll do up to 20,000 gallons or typically last 1 year, and one Berkey sport bottle for the total price of $356, a $40 savings. We also have a Berkey Light, one shower filter and one sport bottle for the low price of $299, a $40 savings. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200 today.
This is The Stateless Man for the pursuit of individual liberty beyond arbitrary borders, oppressive governments, and myths of national obligations. If you value liberty and are willing to migrate and vote with your feet, you've come to the right place.
This is The Stateless Man, and welcome to the second hour of the program. It's been a dynamite show so far, and it's going to continue that way. I'll say that. In the final hour, we have Rob Nettleson, the preeminent scholar on the Article 5 Convention of the States, and I could not think of a better guest or expert to have on regarding that topic. He is a scholar with the Independence Institute, formerly a law professor. And he has written a ton of content on this. We went back and forth through email about how I think he's done 4 years just devoting full time to this topic. And he's been one of my sources for a while, because when I was working for think tanks in the United States, I used to refer to ALEC content, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and he's written an Article 5 handbook, a handbook for state lawmakers and proposing constitutional amendments. Although never used, the states in the United States have the authority, the legal authority, to amend the Constitution by way of Article 5. So far, all amendments to the United States have gone through the Congress. So let me just as a little bit of introduction, give people Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments which, and neither, or goes on to say that basically you have to have two-thirds of the legislatures call for one, and then three-quarters of the states, which I think is 39 states, have to actually approve it. So a very high threshold, and this has never happened before. And in my view, I've been following this for a while, that is a shortcoming of the state legislator, like the state legislatures, because they have an authority there which they've failed to utilize. They're basically not pushing back or using the balance of power that is available to them. However, recently, a lot of negative coverage has come to this topic. Now, I don't want to monopolize the mic, though. So, Rob Nettleson, welcome to The Stateless Man. I'm very pleased we can have you on to explain this process.
I'm very pleased to be on, and thank you so much for the kind words. I should make one clarification.
Yes.
While I've studied this over the last 4 years, I've not devoted my full time just to that. I'm kind of a constitutional detective. What I do is I go into parts of the Constitution that have either not been written about much, and believe it or not, after 200 years, there still are such parts, or I go into areas where there has been writing or research but hasn't been very good. And that's how I became interested in this Article 5 process, because not only was it fairly neglected by most constitutional writers, but what had been written was very poor, and it was riddled with misunderstandings. And so what I tried to do is get to the bottom of it, and I had to change my own views in the course of doing so as well.
Well, one of the, I mean, let's just get right to the problem, really, that this authority is right here, but it seems like nobody wants to touch it. Not nobody, but very few, because of this fear. And there are many groups that are basically just adamant, almost with a religious zeal, against this idea. So what are the big fears, and why are they misguided, if they are misguided?
Okay, well, first off, as you said, Article 5 has two methods of proposing amendments. Amendments have to be approved or ratified once they're proposed, and there are also two ratification methods, and both of them have been used. But only the method of proposing through Congress has been used to completion. Now, I will say that there have been a number of campaigns over the years.
Actually, just slow down. What is the second method of ratification?
The second method of ratification, if Congress chooses, is to send the proposed amendment to state conventions instead of state legislatures. You still need 3/4 or 38 states in order to ratify. But there's a choice that Congress has, and it's only used the convention method once, and it was fraught with some of the same fears that we're seeing today, but as it turns out, it worked out fine. Anyway, to propose the amendments, you could either do it through Congress, as you said, or through the states demanding a convention and then sending representatives to the convention. And this was a very, very well understood and accepted method. So there were several campaigns that got pretty far along that ultimately didn't result in a convention because Congress itself acted. However, and here's where the fears begin. In the 1960s, a Republican U.S. senator sought a constitutional amendment to overturn some Supreme Court decisions, some very liberal activist Supreme Court decisions.
Okay.
A group of liberal commentators and academics went to Congress and went to the scholarly journals and said, you can't use this convention method. It could result in a runaway convention that could totally rewrite the Constitution, abolish the Bill of Rights, and restore slavery. I mean, they really literally said that.
Sure.
And then a few years later, when another conservative amendment was proposed, these liberal groups trucked out the same argument. Well, in one of the great ironies of history, this kind of rewriting of what Article 5 is about was later picked up by some very deeply conservative groups, and they use it to, to raise money and to make noise and so forth. But the result has been that we have not gotten needed amendments through because, of course, Congress won't adopt them.
There is just a lot I could say, and I want to question you about. We're approaching the break. If people want to call in with a quick question, our time is very limited. They can do so 1-800-313-9443, and I'll pick you up after the break. Otherwise, we're speaking with Rob Nadelson of the Independence Institute. Don't go anywhere. This is The Stateless Man. Actually, I had miscalculated the time there. I have another couple of minutes to play with. Rob, just before we go, one of the big challenges that many people have, I think, with even many of the Constitution, is that already to anyone, with a plain reading of the words, the federal government or people acting in the federal government are simply ignoring the Constitution in almost every way. What does it even matter at this point, what we write down?
Well, it matters because amendments work, and often they work better than the original Constitution. An amendment is a supreme expression of the people's will. It's a supermajority action of the people. And we've had a number of corrective amendments, including, for example, the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment, for example, is still, while it's not working entirely as intended, is still an important bulwark of liberties over 200 years after it was passed. The 22nd Amendment, which limited the president to two terms, was established a little over 60 years ago.
Yes.
And there's occasional grumbling about it, but it stays. In other words, it might not seem totally logical to say, gee, why would they obey amendments when they don't obey the original Constitution? But as a matter of experience, they do. That generally amendments do tend to work. And that's why the founders put this mechanism in there as a way of correcting Congress with amendments if Congress ever became abusive or exceeded its powers.
I find that very intriguing because I look at the 10th Amendment, for example, and think, what authority has been left to the states anymore? It seems like nothing, but...
10th Amendment is a little bit of a different case.
Yeah, we are. Now we are at the break. Folks, do call in to have a quick question or comment. We'll be right back with Rob Nettleson.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
Do you have a product or service that you'd like to advertise on the Republic Broadcasting Network? Do you want to support one of the original truth radio networks in existence while getting your company heard across the globe? Right now, RBN is having a holiday special on all of our advertising packages and providing free commercial production to get you started. Call 800-724-2719, extension 111 today. That's 800-724-2719, extension 111, or email powers@republicbroadcasting.org.
A suppressed medical breakthrough guarantees anyone total health power with a simple device. That sounds impossible, doesn't it? In fact, it sounds like snake oil. How is it that something so simple could make such a profound change and isn't headline-making news? What if I told you it was? What if I told you in March of 1991 the news was groundbreaking? If you're like most people, you're wondering if this is true. We'll show you why your doctor hasn't told you about this. Go to drbeckprotocol.com or call 928-853-2821.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Welcome back to The Stateless Man Pursuing Liberty Beyond Borders. I've got Rob Nettleson here. He is the author of the Article 5 Handbook, a publication of the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the preeminent expert, in my view, on the Article 5 amendments convention process. And he just mentioned before, I guess, responding to my one critique or concern that these people in Washington, D.C. just seem to find every way around obeying the laws written for them. And I, this pains me a little bit, makes me a little bit less excited about it, but he believes that, and it is true in many cases that amendments do work. We can look at the Second Amendment to a limited degree, but definitely the First Amendment, and he also mentioned the two-term limit on the presidency. One other, as I've been writing about and reading about this Article 5 process, which to me is an untapped tool that state legislators have, was that there have already been so many petitions for it. Congress, the federal Congress, could have already called a convention. Rob, is that a misunderstanding?
I think it is. But before I address this, I want to make sure that nobody thinks you let me off the hook regarding the 10th Amendment, which certainly has been abused. The 10th Amendment lasted for a good long time. I mean, it was effective for about 150 years, and people have to keep that in mind. Margaret Thatcher made the point that there are no permanent victories in politics, but if we can pass an amendment that will help protect our liberties for the next 150 years, that'll be a great achievement. The 10th Amendment also is what we call a declaratory amendment. In other words, it doesn't have any independent force. It more explains how the system of enumerated powers in the Constitution works. And as a result of that, and I don't want to get too technical on you, as a result of that, it's not quite as effective device as, say, the First Amendment or the Second Amendment or something like a balanced budget amendment or a term limits amendment would be. On the issue of how you get a convention that you just raised, 34 states, that is to say two-thirds of the states, have to pass resolutions called applications. Mm. And it was expected by the founders, based upon their extensive convention experience, that these applications, more often than not, would tell Congress what the subject matter of the convention would be. I mean, not just, you know, let's have a convention so we can have a big party, but can we have a convention, and by this I mean a diplomatic meeting among state representatives, to sit down and talk about a particular issue, like term limits or balanced budget or whatever.
Okay.
The reason that a convention has not been called is that although we've come close a few times, we have never had 34 applications covering the same basic topic. And so Congress has taken the position, and I think quite reasonably, that until you get 34 calling for the same kind of convention, there's no obligation to call.
And so you think that they would go ahead if we did actually get 34, say, calling
for the Constitution? Constitution is absolutely clear, and the history is absolutely clear, that it is a mandatory duty upon Congress. It's more like an executive duty than a legislative duty. And if Congress disobeys it, there is authority indicating that the courts would order it to obey or order an officer of Congress to undertake the duty. So I don't really have too much fear that Congress is going to...
How long would they have to get that done, though?
I'm sorry?
How long would the Congress have? Let's say we get 34 in April. Would a convention occur before the end of the year?
We don't know that, but I suspect it would. I mean, again, the longer Congress waits, the longer you've got a risk of a constitutional crisis. The longer you've got the risks of the states becoming restive, suing, and doing other things. That's not, I think, a political burden that Congress wants. Remember, Congress is still full of politicians, and over the long haul, while they try to find ways to evade their duties, when their feet are held to the fire, they generally tend to act in a reasonable time. Again, if they don't, then we do have a constitutional crisis on our hands, but we shouldn't assume that that's going to happen without even trying.
Mm. I would just make a note about the 10th Amendment that it does say that basically all duties not specifically delineated for the federal government are reserved to the citizens and to the states. And just many of you know that one of the key reasons that the federal government has been able to get around that is through its basically controlling of the purse, that, for example, if you don't obey one of our mandates, we just won't fund something. Or in the case of unemployment insurance, if you don't enact an unemployment insurance system which is consistent with what we require, we'll just tax you at a tenfold rate. It's a very unfortunate problem, but it is one which I don't see an easy way out of, and like you said, there was a long period where the Tenth Amendment did have some teeth, and still people are referring to it. Actually, there is the Tenth Amendment Center.
Yes, now, and as I said, as you said, it had teeth for about 150 years, which is a pretty good long time in politics. I've written about many clauses of the Constitution, and you can find what I've written at the website. It's constitution.i2i.org, constitution.i2i.org.
Right.
And among them has been a very influential article, which was written for Kansas Law Review. It's a law journal, which discusses the spending power, this use by Congress of its taxing and spending power to accomplish purposes that are really outside its constitutional purview, explains the history of what that provision of the Constitution means, clears up myths about it from both the right and the left, and ultimately concludes, as you might suspect, that Congress is really exceeding its powers. When I do my, you know, I'm politically a strong conservative, and I've been active in conservative politics since 1964. And I personally have taken several rhino Republicans to primaries. But when I do my constitutional research, I really try to put that aside and do it objectively and tell you, you know, exactly what this clause means. And as in the case of the Article 5 research, Fergus, that means I've had to change my mind, and I'm willing to do that when the evidence points in the direction as strongly as it does.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got 2 minutes left, and there are sort of two things to go at. One is I wanted to know, I guess you could say, the most promising amendments, but I think that the big question is just this runaway convention. So, and if you feel like you've addressed that enough, we can move on to the second question. But any other thoughts on the people who just really think that there's going to be some kind of reworking of the entire country?
What we have right now is a runaway Congress. Congress sits as a standing constitutional convention, does almost anything it wants, and the Supreme Court usually complies, except when it comes up with decisions even further to the left. But if you read the book you mentioned earlier, the ALEC, the American
Article
Legislative
5 book,
Exchange
yes.
Handbook, there are safeguard after safeguard after safeguard after safeguard against the runaway. There's like a six-tier series of safeguards against it. I just think it's a complete bugaboo, and I think that the text of the Constitution, the law of the Constitution, the history, and the current political realities all make it an exceedingly unlikely event, especially since that convention is not going to have control of the Pentagon. They're not going to have the armed forces to do what they want. So, to me, it's just a red herring. It's a way of making excuses for ourselves against doing what we all in our hearts really know needs to be done. And that is to use the tool that the founders gave us for precisely the kind of crisis we face today.
That's my point too, man. Rob, I just think it is a tool that's right there that isn't. It's a constitutional tool. And
that's
so
right. It's like the veto. I mean, what would you think of a president who said, well, you know, I think this law is wrong and unconstitutional, but I'm not going to veto it because, gee, I wouldn't want to use that.
Well, we have to go to the break. Rob, I really appreciate your time, and I hope people do read your book, the Article 5 Handbook. Don't go anywhere.
Air purifiers produce activated oxygen, called Aaron. Activated oxygen is the natural enemy of odors, pollutants, and many other harmful substances, yet it's completely safe. Our powerful air purifiers unleash the power of a thunderstorm, destroying pollutants in the air we breathe. It destroys many viruses, bacteria, and fungi, kills molds, and oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases. It removes smoke, pollen, and pet odors. Made with quality stainless steel, our portable air purifiers come with a manufacturer's 4-year warranty. If you haven't experienced the Aaron process of fresh, clean air, then call us today and receive 10% off your order. 877-605-9200. Again, that's 877-605-9200. Time for you to breathe clearly again. 877-605-9200.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, DO, and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity. Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll-free, 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steenblok has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steenblok and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steenblok is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Welcome back to The Stateless Man. We're pursuing Liberty Beyond Borders. I just got done with Rob Nadelson about the prospect of, you could say, restructuring or amending the United States Constitution by an Article 5 convention process, a balance of power tool available which is not being used. And I mentioned my concern that these politicians don't obey such laws, I guess, if that's their temporary stopgaps. But I don't know. I guess I get concerned mainly that the, you could say, false narrative or rhetoric flowing around and people attacking each other as though, in my view, in an unjustified manner. And I think he has done the research, and it is a safe measure. I usually don't want to get so engaged in, you could say, political realm, but in this case, it has been of personal interest to me back to my days in Louisiana when I wrote about it significantly as a reporter and editor there. And we were seeking to pass something at that time. So I feel more personally interested in it, and I hope he was insightful. We have next up the final guest on the show. He almost needs no introduction. I remember back in at Loyola University New Orleans, he mentioned that people don't call him Walter the Moderate Block for nothing. And I can agree, this man has been an outspoken advocate for liberty for I'm thinking 40 years. I'm not sure, but a long time before I came into the movement. And I've read his articles for a long time too, mainly at lewrockwell.com, but he's also heavily involved with the Mises Institute, and he's done many presentations. I've seen him speak at Students for Liberty events, and also quoted him in many articles. So, Walter Block, thank you for coming on The Stateless Man. I'm glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me on your show. It's good to be talking to you again, Perkins.
Right. Now, Walter, I wanted to bring you on to discuss perhaps your area of best expertise to some degree in terms of the professional realm, and that is the role of economics in higher education. And you are building, you have been developing for a few years now, I think maybe 10, 15 years you've been in New Orleans. You've been building a distinct department. And I know you sought to have it particularly produce a master's in Austrian economics, although that has not gone ahead. But you're building an independent or different department. And many of us wonder why that is necessary, right? So why is, you could say, free market economics even a niche realm when many of us just think the free market is a logical conclusion from basic economic rationale?
Well, I think it's very important that we have some free enterprise professors, because even though economics professors on average are way more free enterprise, private property rights oriented than, say, professors of sociology, history, religion, literature, you name it, still they're not as free market as I would like them. And I'm very lucky at Loyola. We have a five-man economics department, and all five of us are rabidly in favor of free enterprise. So let me put in an advertisement. If you're a high school kid listening to this, or you're a parent or a grandparent of a high school kid who is going to be going to college and you want to have a free enterprise education, Loyola University is a very, very good place to think of.
I want to back that up, and that's one reason why I'm so glad to have you on, Walter, because in my, I went to Boston University and studied economics there, which is a highly ranked college in terms of economics, at least. And I thought that I did not get a broad enough education in economics, right? Even though I did a directed study and I was a very curious student. It's strange how only after that time when I did my own, you could say, watching documentaries, lectures, a whole new realm was open to me. And often I wonder why that was the case. In particular, the Federal Reserve did not receive attention, not in a critical manner. And particularly in the realm of free banking theory, that just did not even come up. And so if you are seeking to get a richer or broader investigation into economics, as an undergraduate, Loyola is a great place to go, and New Orleans is an interesting or unique city as well.
Yep.
Now, you also, I mean, I'm not sure whether you use the term Austrian economics to describe your department or an Austrian school dominated, but many people, I think, still don't know what that is, and sometimes I get a bit confused about it too, actually, because there are different, I guess, perspectives on what it may be and whether it's a distinct school at all. Do you want just to give a roundup as to what Austrian economics is and whether it, you know, how prominent it is at your school?
Yes, I would say all five of us are either Austrian economists or very, very sympathetic to Austrian economics. Austrian economics has got nothing to do with the economics of the country Austria. The reason it's called Austrian economics is because the creators of it, the first people, Menger, Bombevert, Mises, Hayek, all lived in Austria. It's very similar to Chicago economics, the University of Chicago economics of Milton Friedman, George Stigler, and Gary Becker,
right,
to name a few prominent people. It's got nothing really to do with the economics of the city Chicago. It's just that it's named that because the people who created it, started it, were all at the University of Chicago. These are the two free enterprise schools, the Keynesians, the Marxists, in contrast, the Krugmanites would be a very non-free market. But of the two, the Austrians are much more consistently free enterprise. The Chicagoans compromise an awful lot. We do have, as I say, five out of five free market economists, but don't think that all you're going to get is free market economics, because what we do mainly, at least what I do, and I think I speak for my colleagues, is we have to present all sides of the spectrum, otherwise our students will be ignorant. But what we do is we add on an Austrian or free market critique to the mainstream economics, and I think it helps our students learn mainstream economics even better, so it doesn't detract from that, but then they get a private property rights libertarian perspective as well.
Right. Well, let me, I get concerned when people describe Austrian economics in terms of its outcomes or conclusions in favor of the free enterprise system. It's true that it's dominated by almost anarcho-libertarian people. What are the presuppositions or understandings within the field that lead to that conclusion?
Well, the difference between Austrian economics and all other schools, including the Chicagoans, is that they are all logical positivists. They see economics as an empirical science, whereas we Austrians see economics more as a branch of logic. For example, take the minimum wage law. There's now a big debate over the minimum wage law. And various people are doing various empirical studies to see, you know, whether the minimum wage law does create unemployment for unskilled workers or not. And this would be very much in keeping with the mainstream view that you have to test hypotheses. Whereas Austrians don't see economics as a bunch of hypotheses. Rather, we see things as a bunch of logical laws, similar to the Pythagorean theorem, or 2 plus 2 equals 4. So with regard to the minimum wage, our view, or at least my view, and I think I speak for many Austrians, is that the minimum wage will create more unemployment than would otherwise exist had the minimum wage not existed, provided that the minimum wage is set at least above the productivity of at least one person. So in a sense, this is untestable, because we're saying higher than would otherwise exist, but, you know, we never have ceteris paribus or other things equal. It's possible you have a minimum wage law and the jobs for unskilled workers goes up, but that means that something else has changed that's not due to the minimum wage. Now, let me give you another example, or two or three.
Sure, sure.
We say that there's a tendency for profits to equalize in all industries. So if one industry has got a 100% profit, and another industry has got a 2% profit, and a third industry is losing money, there's a tendency for money to funnel out of the low profit or loss industries and into the high profit industries, which pushes down the high profit and pushes up the low profit industries. But at any given time, you're not going to have equality, so we just say there's a tendency. So you can't test that. Let me give you a third example. I'm now going to trade you my wristwatch for your pen. And I say that in the ex ante sense of anticipation, is the reason we're both voluntarily engaging in this trade is because I like your pen more than my watch, or I like something about your pen more than my watch, and you have the inverse view. And how are you going to test that? You can't test anything. Now, Austrians are not against empirical econometric research, but we say that this just illustrates the theory. It doesn't test it. So this would be a theoretical difference between Austrianism and mainstream economics, not a political one.
Sure, sure. We are speaking with Walter, the moderate bloc. He is a professor at Loyola University New Orleans, discussing the state of higher education and economics and the particular program he has going. Stay tuned to The Stateless Man.
Are you sneezing, coughing, and aching? Do you have a sore throat, a fever, or the sniffles? There's no reason to be sick this cold and flu season with immune system support from Supernatural Silver. Supernatural Silver can give your body the help it needs to fight off harmful pathogens without hurting beneficial gut flora and without leaving behind resistant bacteria. Antibiotics can damage good microflora and often leave behind bacteria which can cause problems later on. If you're sick of being sick, try Supernatural Silver. Supernatural Silver, the number one choice of thousands for a safe and effective way to protect against the many diseases and illnesses that we are facing today. Go to supernaturalsilver.com, read our customer reviews, and see the life-changing results that people are having. That's supernaturalsilver.com. Supernaturalsilver.com. Use the promo code PROTECTED for 20% off your entire order. And like us on Facebook, Supernatural Silver.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Hi, I'm with Keller Williams Realty. I'm in your neighborhood to see if you have any real estate needs.
Maybe. What would you do as a realtor to market my home?
Well, my skills are in knowing the market, listing your home for the best price possible, negotiating on your behalf, advertising your home, and helping to defend your castle.
Defend my castle?
That's right. In Texas, it's called the Castle Law, and a portion of my commission will go to Gun Owners of America as a charitable cause to help secure our freedoms.
Really? That does make you different from other realtors.
It's about time people make a stand for what they believe in. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yes, I do. And I'd be glad if you helped me sell this home. And my friends will be, too.
Here's my business card for your friends. They can call me at 877-605-9200 and ask for Sandra. Oh, and if they're not in Texas, I can still refer them to a great Keller Williams agent where they live. They just need to call 877-605-9200. 877-605-9200.
Welcome back to The Stateless Man. This is your host, Fergus Hodgson, broadcasting from sunny Florida. Beautiful blue sky today, and it's my pleasure to be speaking with you and to have so many fascinating guests, people that I admire, whom I admire. And I just wanted to note that during the break, someone put up a note about the Article 5 process. Quote, "It is foolish for anyone to believe that they would do any different after a con, as in a constitutional convention." And I would just respond by saying that right now the United States has basically a runaway Congress, and there is a tool to respond to it, a balance of power between the states and the federal government. And considering that most of the problems are overbearing against the state government, there's actually an incentive for other state officials to push back. And I thought Rob referred to that really well and explained the many layers of protection against any kind of runaway constitution. But unfortunately, this listener did not call in, but I'm glad to have your feedback, and I'm going to actually look to get Rob back on because we really did not get into many other aspects of it, and I'm sure we can give him another slot. Now we've got Walter Block discussing, you could say that the trend in higher education and economics, or trends in higher education and economics, and the distinct school that he represents, this this School of Austrian Economics. Now, most people, in my assessment, come to these, you could say, differing approaches to economics or common sense economics, not through higher education, through independent learning. And I assume, Walter, you would agree with that statement.
Yes, unfortunately. It would be very nice if academia would include what I call rational economics, but unfortunately there are very few Austrian professors, and an awful lot of students learn it through the Mises Institute, which is an independent think tank dedicated to Austrian economics. It's named after Ludwig von Mises, who was pretty much the father of the school, although not the creator of it, but in my view, the most eminent person. I did want to mention that not only do we promote economics, good economics, but all five of us are very staunch libertarians, which is political philosophy. I mean, you got me into the methodology of Austrian economics before in terms of whether you test or illustrate theories, which is a little esoteric. But I think libertarianism and the Libertarian Party and private property rights and what Ron Paul has done is also another feature of Loyola University, at least the economics department. Now, don't think that the sociology department here or the political science, history, literature, religion departments are like that. No, if you come here, you'll get the usual Marxist, feminist, whatever, homosexualist, queer studies kinds of things, but that's rampant at every school, and I don't think it's bad. I think students ought to be have their nose squashed into lots of theories, lots of different views. What the university ought to be is open to diversity of intellectual opinion, but unfortunately, most universities, when they think of diversity, they think of race or sex or gender or sexual preferences or things like that, but the university is supposed to be an intellectual place, and you'd think you'd want to have some intellectual diversity, and unfortunately, there's very little of it. Let me just speak of the local competing universities right here. That would be Louisiana State University and next door Tulane. At next door Tulane, there's only one out of, I don't know, several hundred professors who is a libertarian, Eric Mack, a friend of mine. And at LSU, not a single solitary one. And I know this because I give lectures at these places, and I ask the students, are there any libertarian professors there? And there'll either be one at Tulane or zero at LSU. And unfortunately, I don't want to pick on Louisiana, but most universities are like that. They just don't have libertarians or Austrian professors.
It is very strange because I've had you on before, and I mentioned that two of the first books that I always offer to people or recommend, they are The Law by Bastiat and Economics in One Lesson. And often I wonder, why did we never learn about the classical liberalism in college, Ryan? It just is not there. And I'm glad that there's this opening, in a broader broader education outside of just universities where people can learn those things and the interest is growing. One particular more specific question would be, in the United States there are, you could say, a limited number of universities that have this free market orientation, and the most prominent one is George Mason, and then this Hillsdale College. And historically, there was or is New York University. What is the status of Austrian economics or free market economics at New York University, and if it is gone now, basically, why is that?
Well, Israel Kirzner was the leading Austrian light at NYU, and he's retired. Mario Rizzo is a magnificent economist and libertarian, and he's still there. So any place that's got Mario Rizzo can't be all bad. There are one or two other people, colleagues of Mario Rizzo. But by and large, libertarianism and Austrian economics would be sneered at there, which is highly unfortunate.
Would be sneered at or is sneered at?
Would be and is sneered at, and classical liberalism, to the extent that it's even mentioned, again would be sneered at by most of the professors there. So at one time NYU was very important because Ludwig von Mises himself was teaching there, and he had a seminar, and Israel Kirzner and Murray Rothbard were his students. Pete Betke was there for a while. He's now at George Mason. Larry White was a professor there. He's also now at George Mason. I would agree with your assessment of George Mason. It's one of the most preeminent free enterprise schools. I would just say, if you're thinking of getting a PhD in economics and you want to go to George Mason, come to Loyola first. That way you get two sets of professors. Whereas if you just go to Mason for undergraduate and graduate, you'll get the same professors, and this way you'll get more of a diversity within the Austrian libertarian movement.
What do you say to people, though, who are concerned that if they go to Mason or to a lesser degree, Loyola, I haven't heard people say that one, but who are concerned that they want to get a job teaching, and they're going to have a hard time if they go out on a limb like that?
Oh, Mason lands their graduates in various places, including Loyola University New Orleans. We now have two professors, Leo Krasnichon and Dan D'Amico, who are graduates of Mason. So the George Mason places its graduates in pretty prestigious places. So I would say that, you know, George Mason, I don't know what the ranking is. It's somewhere in the 20s or the 30s out of about 108 universities granting PhD programs. So I'm a big fan of George Mason. I send my students there, and they come out with PhDs, and they get jobs. Not all back here at Loyola, although Dan D'Amico was a student of mine, and now he's a colleague of mine, but professors that have gone from here and elsewhere to Mason have landed in very prestigious jobs all over the world.
Interesting. So, okay, but let's say people have already gone through this process like me. I've already been through both. I've completed two bachelor's degrees. I'm not going back. And many of us look at university as just a very slow and resource-intensive process, expensive. What is the The one corollary or different example may be language instruction, where I see language instruction at universities as, expensive, slow, inefficient, and now you can learn online through various alternatives at a much swifter speed. And I know that the Mises Institute has this Mises Academy. Is this actually on a path to competing with universities in terms of credentialing?
Well, it's not on a par with credentialing, nor is it on a par, I don't think, with actual learning. Certainly with credentialing, not at all. The Mises Institute does not grant any credential. It doesn't grant any degrees. They only have two or three courses there at any given time. They might have six or eight in total. I'm not sure exactly how many.
Right.
So in terms of credentialism, these MOOCs, M-O-O-C, massive, whatever, on the computer, right now at least there are no credentials, so it's not competitive in that way. In a second way, it's also less competitive, although here I think pretty competitive. I mean, I'd rather, if I wanted to learn economics, I'd rather go good economics and libertarian theory. I'd rather go to Mises online than to pretty much any school where you get some Marxist professor, if he's ever heard of this, just sneers at it. But on the other hand, if you compare online with face-to-face lectures and discussions and dialogue, and professors co-authoring articles with students and things like that, I think Loyola is your better bet.
Right. Well, that was a nice way to finish off, Walter. I look forward to seeing you at future events. I'm not sure whether you're coming to International Students for Liberty in a couple of weeks, but I'll be there. And I want to say keep up the great work. It's my pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Excellent, folks. This is The Stateless Man, and thank you for listening. I look forward to next week.
With finance.